I always, when Parshas Vayeshev, I always remember the old story they used to tell about, I guess, the lady, the elderly Bubba, who was in the Ezras Nashim, when we used to have the upstairs and shuls, and all we had in between were like mesh, and they would sit, and they would be sitting there, and they would be reading their Tzenevaren, I was told. That's what they had, right?
What's a
Tzenevaren? Tzenevaren was a Yiddish rendition of what's in the Parsha. That's what I understand. I've never looked at it, but that's what I'm told. And every year she would come to the story of Yosef and his brothers, and every year she would break down crying. You know, like this terrible story. One year, she comes again, and she's smiling. She's not crying. And she said, you know what? If after 6 years he didn't learn, I can't feel sorry for him. And I always remember that I was told that as a kid. I guess that's a classic that people tell. Dealing with the Parsha, right? That Yaakov was living in Chevron. Chevron was not a great place, apparently, for his flocks. I don't know, what's the terrain around Chevron? Rocky?
Not sure.
I can't remember. Yaakov lived there for us because it was near the Moras HaMachpelah, right?
Right.
And he was continuing the mission commenced by Avram and Yitzchak, teaching people MS, the truth, and trying to bring them to become adherents of the Rabboni Shel Olam. And with this mission, Yaakov seemed to feel this best place to have his Kiruv organization centered was Chevron, and maybe it was because of the chus of his father and his Zeta who were there. We're told that Yaakov had intended to, quote, try to live there peacefully. In other words, sit and learn, give shiurim and things of that nature. And it says that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam doesn't want a tzaddik. I don't know which, maybe every tzaddik or some, to have what Hashem considers too tranquil an existence. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, says to the tzaddik, in Olam Haba, you will have lots of time for tranquility, and presumably you'll be sitting in the greatest base medrash ever. In this world, I don't think it's good for you to have that. And it says, therefore, right, that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu started the incident with Yosef. Now, what this truly means is way above anything I understand. Right? Like, you know, I don't understand why was it similar to the types of nisyonos that Avraham Avinu had to face, that he gets higher and higher? But obviously, there's a reason for it. Yaakov, we're told, favored Yosef over all of his children. First of all, he was the bechor he always intended to have. Rachel was the wife he intended to have, and Yosef was her bechor. Moreover, Yosef was special. He had, it says, all of the outstanding qualities of the other Shvatim. He had them all within him. He had the greatness that he would have been able to be a Bechor, to do the Avoda, which is what was intended until the sin of the Egel. His inborn nobility of conduct he seemed to have, in Yaakov's view, an air of royalty. And we know that there were obviously kings that came from Yosef. They weren't great, unfortunately. Yerovam Nevat and his henchmen. And he was also, in Yaakov's view, Roy. He had the ability to be a Navi. If Klal Yisrael needed a Navi, he could be it. And he had tremendous wisdom, the same level of wisdom as Yisachar. So it would seem that in Yaakov's view, all of his children were outstanding. All of his other children had amazing personal traits, and somehow within Yosef he saw them all. Yosef was the amalgam of everything great. It says not only that, but Yosef facially, in looks, resembled Yaakov Avinu. And it says their life histories were marked by tremendous resemblance. Both Yaakov and Yosef were both born circumcised. Rivka was barren at first, Rachel was barren at first. And somehow the Chachamim say it was only a nace that both Rivka and Rachel gave birth. Yaakov had to put up with brotherly hatred, Esav, and we know that Yosef was not appreciated by his brothers, right? It says Yaakov's brother Esav tried to kill him. He tried to send Eliphaz after him. We're told he tried to bite him in the neck when he ruined his teeth. And Yosef's brothers seemingly attempted to kill him too. They wanted to get rid of him. We see that in spite of Lavan, Yaakov Avinu became wealthy. We also know that even though Yosef, right, ended up in jail, he ended up becoming the de facto monarch of Egypt, and also had tremendous wealth. This proves, we're told, that Kadosh Baruch Hu had special hashgacha over Yosef and Yaakov, because it's rare that someone who is persecuted to the extent that they were could rise to the level of greatness. This was only something HaKadosh Baruch Hu could dictate. Yaakov had no children within Eretz Yisrael, only at Lavan's, and Binyamin on the way before he got to Eretz Yisrael, and Yosef's two sons were born in Mitzrayim.
So there were a lot of similarities.
It says, even though the Shechina, we're told, rests on Har Moriah, the Shechina is in Eretz Yisrael. Nonetheless, Yaakov and Yosef were of such spiritual magnitude that they could have, in effect, God's prominence, God's existence manifest its way into their lives. We're told that Yaakov and Yosef were both accompanied by Malachim, by angels. We know about Yaakov, right, that he met the two camps of angels. And we're told by Chazal that when Yosef goes to meet his brothers looking for them, it's angels who send him on his mission. Yaakov's greatness was foretold in the dream when he lay on the stones that combined and he saw the ladder reaching skyward. And Yosef becomes great because of dreams. His dreams in Canaan lead to his demise, we read. But later on, the dreams of Paro raise him up to be the most powerful man in the world. Lavan was only blessed because of Yaakov. And it says that Potiphar, who ended up being Yosef's father-in-law, so to speak, right, was also blessed. It says they had such greatness inherent in them that they could even, so to speak, reflect bracha onto Rishayim, who wouldn't otherwise get it. Yaakov made his sons give a shvua that he would not be buried in Mitzrayim. They would take him back. And Yosef charged his brothers with the same thing. And we know that it was in fact Moshe Rabbeinu who found his Arayin and brought it. It says Yaakov realized somehow, it says prophetically, that Yosef was destined for greatness. There was no question. But above all, what Yaakov saw in Yosef was the highest level of Torah knowledge. I often think to myself, like, you wonder what did they really have. We know Torah was given on Sinai. We're told at times that they could intuit what it would be, but obviously, if Yaakov could have learned in Shem V'Aver for 14 years,
they had something.
Maybe they had a Torah Shebaal Peh of some sort. I don't know. I mean, it's an amazing thing to try to think. I've never seen anybody write what it is, and maybe there are shiurim on that. Yaakov realized that he would have 12 sons, all of whom would be leaders of Klal Yisroel forever. And he realized that he had the responsibility to educate each of them in a way that they could give the Mesorah on, right, until Mashiach comes. And Yaakov made tremendous efforts in teaching everyone. But with Yosef, it seemed he put even more in because maybe he felt either Yosef needed more, maybe Yosef could acclimatize more, but Yosef got a superior type of education. He said Yosef was taught the Sodos, the secrets of the Torah, no one else did. And it says he gave Yosef the halachos that he learned in the yeshiva Shem V'Aver. And then Yaakov had Yosef repeat these lessons to his brothers, but the sodos, the secrets, he kept to himself. We're often asked, what was it that Yaakov Avinu learned from Shem V'Aver that he could not have learned from Avram Avinu, who he knew originally till his Misadi died, and Yitzchak? And we're told that the keys to existing in Golus was something Shem V'Aver could teach. And it's Yaakov spent 14 years learning that. That's what we're told. Yosef's special position, right, became marked when Yaakov prepared the delicate silk, the coat of many colors, as they call it. And it says, I'm quoting a Medrash, it says that he had long sleeves, which was to indicate that Yosef was to be free of manual labor. He was to be, I guess you would call, the Rosh Yeshiva. His job was to sit, learn, and teach.
No physical labor.
Right. And we're told that any person must realize that favoring one child over another, right, can be exceedingly, exceedingly fraught with danger. Right?
And yet all of the avos did it.
Mm-hmm. The Gemara in Shabbos says, because of two sloyim, a coin, worth of silk, from which Yaakov made this special garment, he aroused jealousy among the brothers, which led to hatred, and led to the Golus in Mitzrayim, right? Presumably that was Hashem's mechanism, that the Bris Bena Basorim now had to be implemented. The relationship of Yosef and his brothers was such that it was fraught with difficulty. It seems that Yosef would see his brothers do things and he perceived something wrong.
Criticized them.
Huh?
He criticized them.
He said he thought them eating limbs of a living animal, but it's not true. Or they saw them eating an animal, meat, and he saw no shechita, because that was a ben pikuach, a child born as the mother was being slaughtered, and there's no halacha of shechita.
Right.
And it says, because Yosef, and Yosef's a tzaddik, so like, you know, if this didn't say it here, I wouldn't say this, but it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Yosef a punishment, mida kineged mida, for his, quote, seeming lashon hara. They said, he accused them of eating animal meat without shechita.
Eiver min hachai.
Right, eiver min hachai. In retribution, you will see that even when they use the goat's blood to tell your father, you're gone, you're dead, right? Even that animal they will shech. There's a note here, it says, there was a machlokes between Yosef and his brothers as to what was their halachic status, because the Torah hadn't been given. Were they b'nei Noach, or were they b'nei Yisroel? If they were b'nei Noach, right, They didn't presumably have to necessarily shecht everything. And if they were B'nai Yaakov, they would. Right? And he says there's the Levush, which is a pshat, has a long arichus, a long essay on this aspect. It says that Leah's children would call the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah sons of maids,
right,
referring to their mother's original status when they married Yaakov.
So they deprecated the others.
Well, the brothers, it said, did not mean to imply that they thereafter had any status of, quote, maid association. They were fully aware that Yaakov had fully freed them. In other words, he married them as full wives. They may have started off in that status, but when he freed them, they were totally Jewish, etc.
They were considered complete wives.
Right.
Not
so,
shifros.
Because you thought that this was derogatory, Hashem said, and you felt they were addressing brothers as children of slaves, you're going to end up in slavery. Now, again, okay, they didn't mean to say anything wrong, but yet, I mean, you know, again.
So this was Yosef.
This was Yosef. So the, and they didn't mean any. So the question is, why would they say it? Were they why would
now
I?
He.
No, but he heard them say things. They would address them. In some way, they
but
would.
He was the only one who was in. He was jailed.
Right.
For years.
But it says
not
that.
Them.
Right. No, I'm not disagreeing. But what I'm saying is somehow they used the connotation of these four brothers, right, having had mothers who were once slaves. And it says they didn't mean anything by it. Like, so why use the term? I'm just throwing out the question. I don't know the answer.
So the thing is, they thought there were different levels of importance according to the to the brothers.
Maybe.
Some brothers were more important
but
than others.
But he says they didn't mean anything. They weren't trying to be derogatory. So, you know, like I said, it doesn't tell us what, or this sefer doesn't tell us why they would use that reference at all.
So what they're doing, what he's doing, he's saying that all of them were equal. And they
well, I don't know what he was saying. What he was saying, indicating, he was saying, you're doing the wrong thing. You can't do this. You can't call them that. And he probably told Yaakov Avinu about these things, as we're told that Yosef brought the Bosom Ra, their suspected mistakes that were bad, to their father.
It never said that Yaakov admonished Yosef for doing this. He never said, don't do this again, or what you're doing is wrong,
yeah,
or something like that.
We don't see that at the beginning. The only time we see the Aviv Yigarasam, that his father rebuked him, was when he talked about the moon, the star, and the moon, the sun, and the 11 stars.
Yeah, right.
And so it says, Vayigar, right? They hated him. His father, it says, at that stage of the game.
And kept it in
right. His he criticized Aviv Shamar as a Dumar. But his father, he made a note that this is not epis totally to be ignored. Apparently there were other things he said that, again, he assumed they were making a mistake, and they weren't. Right? And he told them about his two dreams, one being the sheaves, right? Sheaves of wheat. 11 bowing to 1, and then about the
stars.
About the sun, the moon, and the stars bowing to him, and this was not a way to make friends and influence people, we're told. And it was problematic.
You would think a smart guy like Yosef would recognize that it wasn't...
It wasn't a great thing to do.
It wasn't a diplomatic thing to do.
No, yeah. It says, when he was dreaming, right? It says there was a principle that the way a dream is interpreted can cause its truth to make it reality. It says, the brothers questioning whether Yosef's dream was true and saying, are you going to be our king? For that reason, it says, they had to wait 22 years for Yosef to become the king. They doubted the dream, and therefore they somehow caused a delay in fulfillment. That's what this medrash says. Okay. Rabbi is here. We will pick up tomorrow. Yes,
so because they didn't